welcome to Lambda Weekly. I'm Dave Tafford, and I'm here in the studio with Laurent Landis. Late, Patty Fink is very late today. In fact, her allergies
are kicking up again.
Oh, no. Okay, Patty, hope you feel better. Our guest today is PJ Motum. He works with Abounding Prosperity. Tell us what Abounding Prosperity is, because we've had Kirk on, who was the founder of Abounding Prosperity, but it's been a while since he's been on.
Yeah. So, yeah, Abounding Prosperity is a local community-based organization that focuses primarily on the health of African-American men who have sex with men and transgender women. However, we provide services to everybody, particularly in the South Dallas area, with it having a large homelessness population, sex work population. So pretty much anybody who needs our services or could benefit from our services are welcome, but we have a primary focus on those other populations. We offer STD testing, we offer HIV testing, hepatitis C testing. We also offer STD treatment and other behavioral interventions, which are a small group or individual level interventions to help facilitate behavioral change. And then we offer a number of referral services to other things such as housing, education resources, employment resources, and other things that people in the community could benefit from.
How long has that Abounding Prosperity been around?
Abounding Prosperity has been around since 2005, and it's been federally funded probably over the past, since 2011. So it's grown quite a bit since 2011. Now we have two federal grants and a state grant, so the capacity has tripled in like 13 years.
I remember that first grant that Abounding Prosperity mm-hmm. got, and you were competing against a couple of the big guys over here.
Yes.
And
each we're competing against
guys. Now you're just one of the HIV service organizations mm-hmm. in Dallas. But when you got that first grant, boy, did that cause some waves, because
yeah,
it was like,
who
are these
Texas,
people?
But I definitely heard about the waves and ripples that it caused mm-hmm. Throughout the community. But from what I know, and this I know because I see it in other communities as well, is you have to have some community-based organization that is reflective of the populations
sure.
that you're serving. And
oh,
a lot
absolutely.
Of times that diversity might look a certain way as far as the people that you see on the ground, but the people, the decision makers, the leadership within the organization is not necessarily reflective of that. And so it came out of a place of need for the community, so that they are receiving culturally sensitive and competent services and culturally aware services, like, you know, somebody coming in to seek services and getting those services from somebody who actually knows firsthand what some of their struggles might be.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's just talk about something that happened to you over the summer, which was devastating. Some people, I guess, and we don't really know the cause of this, but because nobody's been caught, somebody didn't care for those services that you were offering.
Right. Like you said, we don't really know the cause or the motive behind it. But
well, you said you had a big fire.
Yeah.
Because Abounding Prosperity has two buildings. One's right on MLK at mm-hmm. 175, and the other one is about a block off of there. Some people might know it better by Peabody Clinic, which is part of Prison Health. That's mm-hmm. right across the street. But it was that building. What happened?
So on the morning of July 7th, I think it was, I was actually out of town that day, but I got a call saying that our community center had been set on fire. And so so many things went through my mind. I was like, okay, was it a small fire? Did somebody like
right.
set a trash can on fire in the yard? Or,
ooh.
You know,
was
it something just like some kids playing around, or what, you know, what was it? Until Kirk actually called me and was a bit hysterical, but he called me and let me know that somebody like literally tried to burn down the building. Actually that day they deemed it as arson. The fire marshals and the fire investigators deemed it as arson. But then by the time I got back, maybe two or three days later, it was all on the news. Actually, it was on the news later on that evening, and I saw the news link, and it was actually the whole building had been completely damaged. Maybe a few weeks later, we reached out to Prism Health immediately. They have a clinic right across the street from ours. They were able to get us the surveillance video, and we saw that it indeed was arson. We were actually the first ones to review the video. We saw that it was indeed arson.
Saw there was a person who...
The person parked there for maybe an hour before they actually did it.
Oh, so we know what kind of car.
Yeah, well, we could kind of see what kind of car it was. We're thinking it was some type of, like, Mitsubishi Galant or something like that, maybe a gray or a black in color. But it was it had like a dent, or it had been wrecked on like the backside, so you could also see that.
Couldn't see a license plate.
Couldn't see a license plate. The Crime Stoppers have the video now, and I think one of their goals was to kind of enhance the video to try to see the license plate to, you know, crack down on who that might have been. But the person actually sat outside the community center for about an hour, actually got out of the car a couple of times. You saw them get out and take a gas can around to the back of the house. They climbed through the side of the back of the fence because it's fenced with the iron fence all the way around. They climbed through the fence, put that back there, then went back to the car, sat there for like another 35 minutes, and then eventually got out and had like what looked to be like a mason jar and their t-shirt. They took it off and put it in there, and you literally saw on the side of the screen, you saw where the building exploded when he threw whatever it was up against the building. And that's what it was.
You know, thank God nobody was hurt in this, but it hit me in the gut. Even though I don't even use that service, I know how important it is what you all do.
Yeah.
So you guys lost everything.
We did. That building was deemed a total loss. So everything that wasn't damaged by the fire was damaged by smoke and water from them putting out the fire.
I was there later that morning, and there was nobody else there. Everybody from Abounding Prosperity was over at their other building. And I walked two steps in just to take a couple of pictures, and I was afraid to walk much further because it's a pier and beam building. Mm-hmm. I was afraid of falling through the floor. That's how badly damaged that building was.
Wow.
So they haven't decided to tear it down yet, though.
No, it was a leased building through one of our actual partners, one of the organization supporters. So I think they're doing the insurance claims and things of that nature now to see, you know, what's going to, but I'm pretty sure it's probably going to be torn down, and I'm not sure if he's going to rebuild it. We don't know if he's going to rebuild it or do anything else. But we've moved forward to secure a new temporary space. We almost have that ready, up and running, through the support of our GoFundMe and some of our other community supporters. We were able to raise from July 7th and that's actually the day that I started the GoFundMe, the same day that it happened, all the way up until probably maybe September 15th, I had raised maybe about $130,000 to help kind of rebuild. Some of it was like crowdsourcing, other, you know, it was just people who heard our story, and then some like pharmaceutical companies and different partners who partner with us all the time donated money. And so we had raised over maybe $130,000 to kind of get us back up and running. But, you know, that doesn't account for just all of the different pieces that we have to put in place in order to relocate to a new center. So we're still short about maybe $35,000-$40,000 of where we need to be for our December 1st opening. But I'm really, really grateful that we've been able to get what we have so far, because one thing that I did notice is that a lot of people who I had never even thought might have even heard of us as a small community-based organization here in Dallas had actually heard of us, or, you know, done their research on us and things of that nature. So we got an outcry of support from people literally all over the country.
Yeah, I remember donating, and I, you know, of course it tells you who has also donated. Mm-hmm. And I thought it was heartwarming for me that the immediate support was there from the community.
Yeah.
Well, as much as Abounding Prosperity is outside the gay neighborhood, in order to provide services to people who need it, who are outside the gay neighborhood, I think, and this is what I felt, that fire was an attack on everybody who has HIV, anybody in the LGBT community. It was an attack on everybody. Yep. This was not an attack on just you,
right?
At all?
Yeah,
not at all.
We definitely felt it being that way. Even the community's response to it, whether it be the Black community or the LGBT community, because I mean, the truth is, we represent both. We're the intersection of both of those identities, so we can't be one without the other. And so, whether it was persons from the Black community at large or the LGBT community, it was very much a blow to the community in the sense that this organization hadn't necessarily done anything malicious to anyone, and we were just providing a free service to people who needed some of the most vulnerable populations in the state of Texas, with Dallas being like number two for new infections in the state and having the highest number of new infections. And this is a free service that we're providing to people. And it's really interesting because it happened literally 3 days after we had announced that we had secured land for our new permanent structure, which we hope to, you know, start a capital campaign and build a permanent structure that includes our clinic, our programs and services, and our main office all on one campus. A lot of people may not know, but Martin Luther King, that entire strip is being regentrified, and so there's very few black-owned businesses in that area. So it's important for us to remain in that historical black neighborhood because we wanted to continue to be that pillar of hope for individuals in that area. And literally 3 days after that happened is when the fire happened. So we, in our heads, you know, we can only tie that together just by happenstance of when it happened and just kind of how it happened. Other than that, we don't know of any other motive that anyone would have to do something like that.
So they had to pull resources from what was going to go towards mm-hmm. the permanent structure. Mm-hmm. Now you just have to, that pulled money and has to go to your temporary space.
Yeah, I mean, one of the things that we do as black people is make a way out of no way, right? Yep. So, like, literally, we had to pull resources from existing programs and services. Mm-hmm. We had to scale back on programs and services in general because we're now out of one entire building, mm-hmm. you know, where we provided our behavioral support services as well as our testing services. We had two testing rooms in that building. And then that also provided a non-traditional place for people to go get tested. They weren't coming into a clinical setting. They weren't coming into a hospital for testing. They were coming into a community center that looked like a home. It felt like a home.
Well, it was a big old house. Were you ever there, Laurent?
No, I've been by there.
Okay, so it's just a big old house. Mm-hmm. But just to say that, downplays the importance of it. Mm-hmm. Like you said, it was a nice, comfortable setting. You were sitting in a comfortable room getting an HIV test when some people come in for an HIV test just to be tested, other people because they're worried.
Yeah.
For good reason.
And then, and aside from the testing services that we provided in that house, that was also literally a community center. So you had community groups that came and met there for free, you know, didn't have to find a venue or pay for a venue for that, have events there for free. There was a computer lab and a library in there where people sought out education and employment resources, particularly youth, LGBT youth who may have been kicked out of their home for coming out, who may have been experiencing some type of transiency or homelessness. They would have a safe place to come throughout the day, much like Resource Center's UB program where, you know, they allow youth to come in there throughout the day. We also did the same thing. It provided, we had some temporary housing that was available for emergent situations in that particular building. So it was a whole host of things that became lost to the community, not just testing services. Right. We like to look at our clients as whole people, and we know that you can't just think about an HIV test or an HIV status without thinking about the fact that you're hungry, you don't have anywhere to stay, you don't have money to do what you need to do. And so looking at things from the whole person perspective, that's what that building ultimately represented.
And one little piece of that, going back to the testing, that was just, that was important, that you're not going to be able to replace because it's not where this other building was. It was right across the street from Peabody Clinic. Being right across the street, when you're talking to somebody, hey, let me walk you over across the street and introduce you to the doctors over at right. Peabody. And you could mm-hmm. walk them across, and usually it's Gary Sinclair who's the doctor over there. And just, hey, I have somebody, he just tested positive, and I just wanted to introduce you. He needs some services. You know, and just that kind of a, not, okay, here's a card with a phone number on it. You know. Yeah, call these people. So then you're relying on that person who might be scared out of his mind having gotten a positive HIV test, even though we have drugs for it. Most people, the drugs are very effective. They'll live a normal life as long as they continue on their medication. You get that kind of a, you know, life-changing diagnosis. There's a difference between, hey, let me walk you across the street, mm-hmm. and you're sitting in a real comfortable, you know, home atmosphere. And you're just going across the street, and you meet the people over there, and they're very nice. And, you know, and here's a card. You're relying on the person to actually make that call and then come back and
even accept the fact that they knew their new diagnosis. To
right.
even accept that,
right.
you know,
right.
some testing agencies or some places send people out the door with a preliminary positive result, and expect them to come back in 2 weeks to do confirmatory testing and come back in a month to get on medications. And that was very important to us, especially our Lancaster Care program. Literally, we're able to, you know, give someone a positive result, let them sit down, have a meal if they need to, whatever they needed to do to really absorb the reality of or their new reality, talk to them about it or whatever, and then literally walk them over hand in hand across the street to meet the doctors, to have them, you know, sit through a medical consultation. And if you look at Dallas, if you look at Department of State Health Services surveillance data, and you look at what we call the continuum of care. The continuum of care is testing, linking to care, retaining in care, adherence, and viral suppression, which is the goal is viral suppression for those right. who are HIV positive. Our communities, black and brown communities, they do good with the testing. They do good with linking to care. It's when we get to retaining in care, adherence, and viral suppression is where we fall off. It literally falls a number of levels to when it comes to that continuum, and we are able to address that by walking people over to care.
And we're going to take a break, and we'll follow up why that is. Why do the black and brown community fall off in getting to that major step of suppression? So we'll be right back in just a moment with Lambda Weekly.
I'm Dallas City Councilman Adam Medrano, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
And this is Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet here in the studio with LaRon Landis. The late Patty Fink is very late today. And our guest is PJ Moten. He is with Abounding Prosperity. We're just in the middle when
show, we were talking about the steps, the ultimate goal of Abounding Prosperity when you go come in and take a test. And what the next step is. And ultimately, you want to get to viral suppression. But like you were just saying, PJ, before the break, and that is that unfortunately with the black and brown community they fall off. Why is that?
So one of the things that we have to kind of realize is that we do have a lot of AIDS-related services that test individuals, and then they then have to jump into it. It's almost like navigating insurance, health insurance. Like even me as an adult who's been working full-time jobs for the past like 5 or 6 years at least since I've been out of school, trying to navigate health insurance is a headache for me. And so when you're talking about having to access testing services at one place, go to a completely different place for like a medical consultation or get your labs done, your initial labs, go to a completely different place to see a doctor, go to a completely different place to get your medication. Like when you think about having to do all of that on top of having to absorb the fact that you're now HIV positive, that's a lot to deal with.
It is all at once.
All at once. And trying to do that when you're not always dealing with the nicest people over the phone, not always even getting a real person on the phone, you know, not always necessarily getting the best, getting treated fairly when you go into some of these places. I mean, it's the medical field, you know, it's high impact, there's huge caseloads, and so you have to look at it on both ends of the spectrum. Like, you know, you have people who are trying to do their best, but then you also have people who are really vulnerable and really trying to have someone just tell them that it's okay. And so when you release someone out to go and do those things without some type of navigation services or help, then it could be texting, and you could just say, hey, I don't feel sick right now, so I'm not even going to worry about
it. Right. So you had mentioned before that, you know, which I thought was a good point, that, you know, Abounding Prosperity is kind of like the intersection of men of color who, same gender loving men, and just the black community.
Mm-hmm.
So you're open to everybody to come in and get tested,
right,
obviously, but how many of the heterosexual community black do you actually see come in for services?
We actually see a number of particularly black women. Mm-hmm. As you may or may not know, some the HIV rates in black in the communities that are black women are particularly high as well.
Very high.
And one of the things that we have realized, or one of the trends that we have noted in our service, is that you have a number of black women who have sex with men who have sex with other men. And so that immediately ties those two populations together as far as when we're talking about risk or what they could possibly be exposed to. And you have a number of black women who are okay with that. You know, there's a paradigm shift in the way that we view sexuality these days.
Mm-hmm.
We're all kind of fluid in some type of way, you know, but it still doesn't change.
Especially LaRon.
So you have to realize what that does to your lifetime risk of contracting HIV. And so that's why we see a number of black women. Also, we look at black women as kind of like the pillars to the black community. And so they are bringing their kids who may be heterosexual. They are bringing their daughters, their sons, their nephews. You know, they're kind of driving some of the services.
I want to give your organization some props on this. One of the things Kirk did when he first opened there right on MLK was he walked from building to building to introduce himself, and he developed some real interesting relationships, like mm-hmm. with the mosque that's right down the street from yeah. you. That's not a group that you would automatically think, hey, this is the group that we're going to partner with. But you have.
Yes. And interestingly enough, the building, our new temporary building, is owned by a church, like an African church that is literally they have two different churches on each side of our new community center, and the entire building is owned by those congregations. So interestingly awesome. Enough, that intersection between religion and these types of services that
it's
we
not have. Oddly enough, and I hate talking about AIDS that way, it's odd that churches are not jumping on the health of their members.
Right.
That's what's odd.
But then you have to look at the reality of things, David. And we think about like some of these mega churches and right. and some of these large congregations that have huge populations, may even be of same gender loving individuals, but will not take our call to partner. Or will
that's
not.
Odd. No, I'm sorry. That's the part that's odd.
That's what I was just about to say, PJ. It is. I see what both of you are saying, but the reality of it is mm-hmm. most churches don't do that.
Right.
So, yeah.
But churches that care.
They should, David. You're right. But most of them.
As odd as that sounds, that's become our reality. That's yeah. been our reality for as long as I've been working in this field. And so it does feel a little, not necessarily odd, it's heartwarming, but it does feel a little kind of, I don't know, different
it's
that
like,
we are able to
it's
partner
like,
with
I don't know what to do with this. We'll help your people stay healthy, and you're saying thank you. You know, right. that shouldn't be odd. That should be the way it works.
Agree.
I'm not saying every church has to provide healthcare services, but it is in their interest that the members of their church are healthy.
Mm-hmm.
And they should be doing and referring and partnering with, especially when it doesn't cost them anything. I understand, hey, we'd like you to do such and such, and it's only going to cost you. I get that.
There's several like documentaries and small videos about how the black church has played a role in HIV becoming an epidemic within our communities.
Yeah.
You know, that whole thing when you talk about the intersection of your sexuality versus your religion, and what the Bible says about that. And then when you also think about, you know, how people have this whatever against medicine or whatever the case is there so many different contradicting theories.
There is nothing at all in the Bible that says you shouldn't take medication. Nothing.
Of course.
I agree.
But I think part of the problem with what you're saying, PJ, is a lot of churches, particularly black churches, didn't even want to talk about it.
Mm-hmm.
Didn't even want to talk about it.
Plenty of white churches.
Plenty of white churches, too. So, but mentioning medicines, one of the biggest things to fights in helping for HIV is prevention. So we have this thing called PrEP now.
Mm-hmm.
You all have a PrEP program.
We do. And for those who don't know what PrEP is pre-exposure prophylaxis. It is a pill you can take once a day. And what it does is it's a medicine. Right now it's a medicine called Truvada, but they're looking at, you know, approving some new ones. But it's a medicine that coats your cells that HIV attacks with the medicine, and it's also throughout your bloodstream. It coats those cells with that medicine so that if HIV ever does get into your body, it can't invade those cells and transform those cells into HIV cells, as well as with the other medicine that's in your bloodstream. It kills off any HIV germs that get in your body. So it's almost like essentially like a birth control for HIV. However, it doesn't protect from any other STDs. So that's why we always kind of make sure that people know that there's still an importance with using condoms, even though you may not have to even though you may not have to worry about HIV anymore, there's still other things that can tear down your immune system and make you more susceptible to contracting HIV. But there are no known cases of anyone who's taking PrEP and adhering to it correctly, who's ever contracted HIV.
I was about to say, that's a really important point, adhering to it, taking it correctly, like you're supposed
to. Well, one of the things that they're finding with PrEP is you don't even have to take it every day and you'll still be fully protected.
Yeah, so they're talking about what they call seasonal risk. And so, for instance, say if I am going to Miami for the weekend and I know 2 weeks before, you know, that I'm going to Miami and I can start on my PrEP 2 weeks before I go to Miami and continue to take it at least 2 weeks after, I'd still be fully protected even though I hadn't taken it the whole year before.
Because PJ doesn't have sex in Dallas, he only has sex in Miami.
Only in Miami.
No, but what you're saying is, if you're a person who is not generally sexually active, but you are situationally,
right?
Or
if you're sexually active and your risk is higher during a certain time. So if you're going to wild out on a vacation or something, or you plan on having multiple partners, or even if you never have sex at all and you just plan on having sex in general. And even if you plan on using condoms with that, you just have that extra.
Or if you have a partner who's HIV positive and
you're HIV negative.
And you're negative, you're in a discordant couple, and your partner who is positive is going to be away on business for the next couple of months, and you're just not going to. Is it necessary for you to be taking this pill? No, not necessarily. So, but you know he'll be home at such and such a time,
right.
And so a few
and
weeks
so
ahead
take
of
it
time.
At least enough time to make sure this.
And the amount is about 2 weeks.
It's about two weeks. They say it's different between men and women. They say two to three weeks for women, and at least 9 days for men. But on the average of that is about two weeks. So that's the narrative I see.
And we know all of these drugs, even PrEP, that stuff is expensive.
Oh, very much so.
So how are you all? Is it through the grants?
So we're literally again making a way out of nowhere. So there's little mini grants just where we can just have the capacity to see people. Mm-hmm. There's other grants where we have the capacity to have the facilities. There's other partnerships where we have the capacity to fill out the paperwork to get the patient health patient assistance programs to actually afford the medication. We're piecing all of the different pieces together that you can or that are available in order to get PrEP. Unfortunately, Texas is not one of those states that, you know, this is something that is provided through support of the state. Not at least not yet. I mean, they've started to provide support for PrEP, but not on a large scale where it's supporting these programs in a way that they can be sustainable. So we're just piecing together different things in order to make our program work.
Now, if you go to New York and you're on the subway, and I'm saying that like people here, oh yeah, like if you're on DART here in New York, people do ride the subway.
You're gonna have no choice.
Right.
You're gonna see a PrEP ad on the I don't even know what it's called, but it's the thing
on
where
the
all
the
ads
the train,
are.
Well, you're gonna see them on the wall, on the marquees. You're gonna see them coming down the stairs. You're gonna see them in Times Square.
You're gonna see a PrEP ad if you're in Washington. On all of the public transportation, on the side of the bus, you're going to see PrEP ads. They are really pushing PrEP.
Mm-hmm.
Here, you will not see an ad for it. Why not?
You actually have a number of... The first thing that we had to do when we started to fight to make PrEP available in Dallas is actually, believe it or not, convince doctors that PrEP is something that they should prescribe to their clients. Like,
really?
Literally, there were doctors who were saying, because of religious reasons, we don't... You know, we're not going to do that.
Oh, God. Here we go.
Okay, so again, their religion prevents them from preventing a disease.
Yep.
Right.
That is the narrative that we were hearing. Like, we're not hiring you to be moral compasses for your client population. We're talking to you about something that can change your client's lives.
So are they pro-cancer, too?
We didn't even bother to get into all those conversations because it was just so mind-blowing to hear that this was the actual narrative from local physicians. Now, you know, we do have some...
Hepatitis, like, do they like that?
Apparently so, right?
Because they're not...
for hepatitis C now, so, you know.
Right.
Did we have to go do that same talk with them and convince them to provide the cure?
So if we mention hepatitis C, I love this story. I was up in Colorado a few years ago, saw a cousin that I hadn't seen in years. Oh, what are you doing? Blah, blah, blah. It's just in this commercial. I don't know. It's for some new drug. I don't know what it's for. So that fall. We're watching TV. And it's like, there's Melanie. It's like, I'm ready for The Cure. And she's on this dock and her hair is blowing. And so... So there's my cousin on the dock being cured from hepatitis C.
Yeah.
So,
wow. It's a lot of people who have contracted hepatitis C, and so we provide services for that now too.
Right. Oh, awesome.
Some people because of its relation to HIV and HIV related risks.
Well, it's sexually passed,
and it can be sexually passed too.
Can be. There are other ways to pass that.
The main populations that we look at when we're talking about hepatitis C is. IDUs, intravenous drug users, homeless populations, and majority of people who were born between 1945 and 1965, the baby boomers, because that was
old people
was,
like Laurent.
How did I know you were going to go there? But yeah, but those are definitely cross populations that we find when we're looking at our focus populations. We do find people who fit into those categories, and that's why it's important for us to provide that service too. It's necessary, especially even considering the homeless population over by where we're even geographically located.
Now, over at the newspaper, I've had people call me and say, my doctor will not talk to me about PrEP. What do I do?
Get a new doctor.
That's my
other than getting a new doctor, out of the first step of getting basically a consortium of doctors who would actually prescribe PrEP to their clients, one of the second things that we had to do is find some time to educate those doctors on PrEP, what PrEP was. This is when PrEP has been out since about 2012. Now, mind you, this is something that we started doing in 2015. So that's how behind the curve we, not necessarily us, but just people making it. So when PrEP first came out, it was targeted towards white gay men. You know, it takes a minute for it to trickle down to the communities who need it most. Mm-hmm. And so by 2015, we started talking about PrEP in Dallas and making it more affordable and making it accessible. So one of the second things we had to do is actually start educating, and Abounding Prosperity did this. Abounding Prosperity was actually one of the first organizations to get a PrEP grant from Gilead Sciences, who supported basically the education of PrEP, education community.
And that's the drug maker that makes Truvada.
Yeah, that's the drug maker that makes Truvada, which is the only FDA-approved PrEP right now. One of the things that we had to do is start to educate the community and the practitioners on what PrEP was, what are the benefits of it, when you're talking about that seasonal risk piece, what it actually does. And so we would have group sessions of about 15 people and actually teach them about PrEP. You know, a lot of people, even still to this day, when I have testing sessions with people, they don't even know what they've never heard of
PrEP.
They've
never heard of it.
Never heard of PrEP in 2017.
Because how do you hear about things? By advertising, and it's not being promoted that way in Dallas.
Right.
Okay, now, drug companies have representatives that go out and speak to doctors, and those representatives are taken two ways. Oh, sure, you want me to use your drug rather than the other drug because you're being paid to tell me to use your drug. But at least they've heard of it that way. Mm-hmm. And they've, you know, even if you're prescribing that one, not this one, but in this case, there's not the choice yet, you know about that disease or that treatment for disease from this. Now, other than because the people from Gilead, they're really horrible people. I have spoken to them. They are just annoying, obnoxious people, which is one reason I've never invited them on the show. Anytime I ask them a question, oh, so you want to kill people? Yes.
You know what?
I have some really great
friends from Gilead that may not be a part of the culture of what, like, maybe leadership, what you have dealt with.
But my point being, how have doctors not heard about PrEP when drug representatives go to them all the time to just introduce new drugs, to give them samples even of certain drugs, maybe not this one in particular, but how can doctors with a straight face say they have not heard of these drugs in a city like Dallas? I understand, okay, you're all the way out in the country. The drug representatives don't necessarily. You're in the middle of a city. And I'm saying this not just because you're telling me this. I've had other people tell me that their doctors either don't know about PrEP or absolutely refuse to prescribe it or refer their patient to somebody who can prescribe it.
Well, you think about the fact that doctors don't even offer HIV screenings or sexual health screenings as a routine service.
That's
pretty indicative of why they may not have heard of PrEP, because that's maybe something that they're uncomfortable dealing with or I don't know what the case is. Once again, it could be a contrast to their morality.
Okay, we need to take a break. But again, not doing an HIV test in this day and age when there is treatment for it. I understand in 1985 when the tests first came out and there was absolutely no treatment and there was so much discrimination, you were better off not knowing. Mm-hmm. In this day and age, when there are treatments for an illness, what illness do you not test for when there is a possibility that your patient has this illness? What illness don't you test for when you can treat it? I don't get that. You're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM. I'm Dave Taffet. We are here with PJ Moten from Abounding Prosperity. Laurent is in the studio with us today. Patty is off. She'll be back with us next week. We'll be back with more Lambda Weekly right after this.
Hey, guys. I'm CeeDee Kirvin, and you're listening to Lambda Weekly on 89.3 KNON FM.
This is Lambda Weekly on KNON FM. I'm here with Laurent Landis. PJ Moten from Abounding Prosperity is our guest. He's also one of the leaders of Dallas Black Pride, which was just a couple of weeks ago.
It was. You're a busy man. So tell us, how did Dallas Black Pride go this week?
Dallas Black Pride was very, very successful. I mean, we had so much going on this year, especially between Juneteenth weekend, which is one of our two annual celebrations, and then Black Pride weekend. We've had so much going on, everything from the fire to, you know, having to revamp and recoup and put ourselves in a new community.
Don't make your fire an annual event.
Oh, no. We hope not to make that fire an annual event. But yeah, we've just had so much going on, but it still ended up being a huge success. It was actually a little, just a little bit less stressful this year than it has been in the years past. We scaled back quite a bit. You know, we have the Ball House and Pageant Communities Conference that happens concurrently with Dallas Black Pride Weekend. So it's getting that together, as well as organizing all of the events, as well as just building and leading the coalition of local promoters and everybody who wants to have something that particular weekend. So it's a lot of work. It's a lot of people to work with, but we seem to have a pretty solid team and of us, the leadership, and the community partners.
You said it was a tiny bit less stressful this year. Mm-hmm. Is it because things are just kind of getting into a nice flow? People know their roles, and it is growing.
All of that plus we just scaled back just quite a bit. Yeah. You know, we had one main event and then we had several other free events. One of the things that we like to tout as Dallas Southern Pride is we're one of the only Black Prides in the country who actually offers free events for our community members and for our patrons. Everything is not paid. We had a free opening reception that had free drinks and food. We had a free show with all of Dallas's all-star Black performers. We had a free barbecue on that Sunday with music and food and drinks. There was several ways to get into the big annual pool party event. This year we had Remy Ma.
Oh yeah.
So there were several ways to get that for free. We had
award that week.
Yeah, I think she won a BET Hip Hop Award. Uh-huh,
she did.
Yeah.
She did.
Yeah.
And she was the cover of the Dallas Voice.
She sent us
a picture of her holding the paper.
Yeah.
Awesome.
It was.
Awesome.
Yeah, with Kirk. Yeah. So that was great. She shouted out the Dallas Voice actually on stage. Yeah. I wish we would have gotten that on video, but we gave her, while she was on stage, we stopped her and handed her the paper, and she held it up. She held it up and shouted us out. So shouted you guys out. So that was great too. Yeah, and so with that event, we always offer the opportunity for our main event to test for tickets. And so you actually, if you take an HIV test, mm-hmm. You actually get the opportunity to actually get a ticket in return as an incentive for going. That's another way that we push, you know, our bottom line, which is, you know, making sure that our community is tested.
You bribe people.
Basically.
Hey, whatever works.
Right, whatever works.
I'm all for it.
There's nothing wrong with it. Everybody wins in that case.
Yeah.
Another thing I wanted to talk about really quickly before we move too far from the HIV conversation is, I know we talked about PrEP as a prevention option, but we also, it's important to couple that with what we call TASP, which is treatment as prevention. That means that, you know, if a person gets on to their HIV medication, their medical regimen, and they stay on it for a certain amount of time, they become what we call undetectable, mm-hmm. which is when they have so little of the virus in their blood that they can't pass it on to anyone. I always like to compare it to, like, sickle cell. Like, you have sickle cell, but you can't give it to anyone. Yeah, that's another important thing that I always like to talk about. And actually, just recently, maybe on, I think it was Black Gay Men's HIV Awareness Day, which was recently, September 27th, I think it was.
The CDC.
The CDC released, they're finally, now we've been pushing this with the CDC, community-based organizations, researchers, CROI, which is a conference on our cure research. We've all been pushing this for the federal government to get behind this idea of U equals U, undetectable equals untransmittable. And so they finally this year released it that they're backing the whole idea that U equals U. And so that's very important, and it's a leap forward for
us. There's been evidence of that for years.
There's been evidence since, I think 2013 was the first published research on a person who's undetectable not being able to transmit the virus to someone else. And just recently, I think it was CROI, this past summer in July, they released the largest study ever, which was the third wave of data from the partner study that said that no couple, certis court in a couple where the partner was undetectable and they had whatever type of sex they wanted to have, and no couple ever transmitted. There was no transmission of HIV to their uninfected partner. So that was very important. So I just wanted to make sure I mentioned that, because we do have PrEP, but we also have TASP for those who aren't able to access PrEP or whatever the case is. It may be in a sort of discordant relationship. It's very important for your partner then to stay in, to become undetectable and remain undetectable.
Well, if you know that your partner is undetectable, there isn't an urgency for you to get onto PrEP.
Yeah, and that's another thing when we're talking about if PrEP is right for you. We don't push PrEP for everybody who's negative. PrEP has to be right for the candidate. If you're in a monogamous relationship with a negative partner. Now, what I always like to say is, like, you know, you always want to have your own internal protection.
Absolutely.
But if you have an honest relationship with a monogamous partner and you both are HIV negative, then PrEP may not be something that you need to just burden yourself with trying to get and retain yourself on.
Or while your partner remains undetectable, you might have Truvada so that you can go on PrEP.
Right.
But until he has a flare-up of something, you know, because there are times where I think there have been a couple of reported cases where somebody did transmit it, but they weren't actually undetectable at that time.
Yeah,
right.
Exactly. And that could be caused from anything that lowers your CD4 count. When your CD4 count lowers, it has the opportunity for your viral load to go up. Mm-hmm. And so that's why it's important. If somebody says that they're undetectable, it has to be undetectable based off the last set of labs. It can't be undetectable because you tested you were undetectable 3 years ago, but you hadn't taken your medicine in the past year. You may not be undetectable anymore because it has to remain a stable level of medicine within your blood.
It's unlikely that you're still undetectable.
It's unlikely, yeah. But yeah. I'm saying some people, you know, develop some type of built-in resistance to the virus, so it's not as replicating itself as fast. So it's not completely impossible, but you could still transmit it possibly if you are not truly undetectable. And the only way that you can do that or tell that is if you actually are getting your quarterly labs.
But a time that you can become less or a little bit detectable, your viral load count might go up a little bit, is you're sick, you can have
a common cold.
It could be something more serious, even.
Stress, you know, all of those different types of things. Because that's what people fail to realize also, like any common cold or anything can make you more susceptible to even contracting HIV. You could be a perfectly healthy HIV negative person, but, you know, have some risky sex at a time when you may have had a cold or the flu virus might be, you know, present in your body, but you're not seeing symptoms. Anything that's going to bring your immune system down creates pathways for HIV to come in. And the same thing with people who are HIV positive. That's why it's important to, you know, eat right, take your medicine, exercise, all of those things, because you have to do all of those. You can't just take the medicine. You have to do that and all of those things in order to remain as healthy as you can be and, of course, have the same life expectancy of someone who's HIV negative.
And that's why it's also important to be tested for other STDs. Because if you're positive for another STD, that makes you more susceptible to receive HIV.
That makes
also.
You more susceptible to contracting HIV, and it makes you more susceptible of, if you're already positive, transmitting HIV to someone else, because that could then make you detectable if you have your body trying to fight off two things at one time.
Exactly.
Say you have a gonorrhea infection and you're HIV positive, Even though you're taking your HIV medicine, your immune system is not as strong as it could be, and you could, you know, go over that threshold and become detectable or have enough virus that replicate in your body in that time and period, depending on how your body is reacting to the virus in general.
Which is why I keep telling LaRon he needs to get his gonorrhea test done.
Good Lord.
Regularly.
Let's go back to Pride.
Okay.
Before the show, we were talking about how does Dallas gay Black Pride compared to some of the other cities, and I said, you know, I didn't expect it to be, but is it getting bigger? Is it getting coming to rival Atlanta?
Well, it's not quite rivaling Atlanta. Atlanta's Black Pride is the largest in the country.
Huge.
It's huge. It happens Labor Day weekend. They actually, like us, have two different annual Pride celebrations. So they have Martin Luther King weekend that they turned into kind of like a Black Pride weekend, and then they have Labor Day weekend, which is their main Black Pride weekend. And we have Juneteenth weekend, which is kind of like a mini Pride or summer version of our Black Pride. And then we have Black Pride weekend that happens concurrently with the State Fair Classic, which is typically the first weekend in October.
Mm-hmm.
So Atlanta's the number one as far as size. And then you have like DC, Miami. And so Dallas will come in like number four-ish when you start thinking about maybe Philly Black Pride, Chicago, and LA Black Pride are, just because they're in huge cities, you know, may have the numbers, but they're not as popular as like Dallas Black Pride. People, the Juneteenth and Black Pride Weekend are annual events that community members nationwide look forward to.
One thing that makes Dallas Black Pride so big is that we get so many people who come in for the events.
We get a lot of people that come in, whether they're coming for the State Fair Classic or for Black Pride Weekend in October, for Juneteenth, just because it's just the perfect weekend for like a vacation or some time away. It's in the middle of June. There's not really much happening around that time. There's no other major events happening around the country. So it's kind of the perfect weekend to get away to Dallas, which is
not a before the biggest regular Pride events in New York, San Francisco, and Houston. Before,
and it's happening during Pride Month. It's the only Pride Month activity that happens in Dallas for the LGBT community. So it's just another thing that's important for us that we tout a lot.
So Dallas Black Pride is bigger than Houston's Black Pride, which might be a little surprise to some people because Houston has a larger population. And Houston's regular Pride,
I call it mainstream Pride.
Mainstream, there you go. Not like that. Mainstream Pride is bigger than anywhere else in the South, including Atlanta. But David made an interesting connection there. Maybe that's why Dallas Black Pride is not so big, because it has probably been absorbed. Those folks have just been absorbed in the mainstream Pride, which brings me to, you know, some people have asked, is there still a need for a separate Pride?
Absolutely. Yes, like, this is the conversation that I always ask. Why do people even ask that? Like,
but they do.
They do ask. But there are so many different things that are priorities for the different populations. When you think about mainstream Pride, you're thinking about corporate, this whole LGBT agenda, this whole equal rights and marriage equality, and all of these things that are important to the mainstream LGBT community. But when you're thinking about the Black LGBT community, you're thinking about ways of survival. You're thinking about ways to combat HIV. You're thinking about ways to combat homelessness, ways to combat the inequalities that people face in their different areas and spaces and places. You're thinking about freedom to be yourself outside of the religious constraints of your family and things of that nature. You're really looking for a safe space to be all of who you are. And that's not necessarily embraced or celebrated in that mainstream Pride. That's a different type of agenda. And so absolutely, Black Pride is necessary, and it was built out of necessity all the way back to when you think about when Black people created any affinity space for themselves.
Absolutely.
It was out of necessity. It wasn't out of desire to compete or anything like that. Dallas Black Pride or Dallas Southern Pride is not ever trying to become as big as Allen Ross or anything like that. Dallas Black Pride is what it is, and it's effective in what it is. And another explanation why Dallas Black Pride or Dallas Southern Pride has become bigger than Houston's Black Pride is because of a lot of there's a connection between the 45 connections. So like people are transient between Dallas and Houston all year round.
They are.
Community members are transient all year round. They come to Dallas just to party for the weekend. And Dallas Black Pride Weekend or Dallas Southern Pride Weekend is something that Houstonians always come for. Even the Houston Health Department is one of our largest supporters for Dallas Southern Pride. Yeah, so I mean, it's very important that, I mean, we're combating a lot of the same things. We have a lot of the same agendas, and that's to get people tested and into care, whether they live in Dallas or Houston. That's Texas in general. And so it's important for us to partner in that way. There was even one year that we took our mobile unit down to Houston to test during their Black Pride Weekend. That happened probably back in, like, maybe 2013 or so. So it's very important for us to foster that particular relationship.
This year, there was an extra reason for them to come. They were underwater.
There was even more of a reason for them to come. But they had already been coming the years before. And even this year, through our Ball House and Pageant Communities Conference, the head of the Houston Health Department, Ms. Marlene McNeese, she received the Community Ally Award from our conference entity. So it's always important for they vended at all of our events. They were a part of all of them. They always come to support us, even to help us, you know, pack tickets and things.
There's another stupid thing about that question, though. It's a successful event.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why would we cancel it? It's a celebration. It's a fun weekend. Mm-hmm. Tourists come in. People come for this event. Why would we cancel it? You don't like it, so don't go.
Yeah, absolutely.
You know, it's just a dumb question.
We don't try to make ourselves for everybody. We are for who we are for, and they come and they enjoy it. And like you said, it's a celebration of not only my LGBT identity, but my Black identity.
Absolutely.
And what it means to be both of those things mm-hmm. at one time. A lot of people... I often get the question, do you feel more Black or gay? And I'm like, I don't feel more either of them.
Right. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I am who I am. Of course, you see that I'm Black before you see that I'm gay, but I can't be any less of either of the
right.
two.
That
is who I am. And I'm like, why would you even ask me a question
right.
like that? Do you feel more blonde or do you feel more pale? Like, what kind of question
right,
is
right,
that?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
Or do I feel like I'm more gray or
or more gay?
Right.
Or dark hair. Well, it depends on the week.
Right.
We're coming up to the end of the show. Next show is just pulling in, so we're going to go over by a few minutes.
Yeah,
so.
But no, that's fine. But before we leave and wrap up, give out your number or Belden of Prosperity's information on how mm-hmm. to get in touch with y'all because you still need some help.
I think what he meant is... Give out your personal number
right.
for anybody who'd like to.
Call me, okay?
Blow up his phone. Hey.
So Abounding Prosperity can be reached at, so our main office is 2311 Martin Luther King Jr. Boulevard, and that's Dallas, Texas 75215.
Right on the corner
right
of 175.
Right on the corner of 175. And as soon as you get off 175 and MLK, we're right there literally to mm-hmm. your left. In the old, what a lot of people might remember as the Enterprise Rental Car Place. So that's where we're located, our main office. Our newest office, our new community center, is located actually right to your right when you get off there. And it's at 1705 MLK Suite C. So it's right down the street. You can reach us online at www.aboundingprosperity.org. And you can donate there. There's a donate button at the bottom of the page. We actually still have our GoFundMe up. The goal was $50,000. We're now at about $30,000, maybe $31,000. And that could be reached at gofundme.com/APCommunityCenter. Or you can just search Abounding Prosperity on GoFundMe. Also, our Facebook page has tons of stuff about us. That's facebook.com/APCommunity. Or just search Abounding Prosperity on Facebook and then we should show up. That has all the information. It actually has pictures of the fire. It has pictures of the new community center, how we found it, and then how it looks now. There's another update of that going up today. And then we have our grand opening of our new community center, which will have our youth drop-in center, our clinical space, which is our Hope Health Center. Hope Health Center stands for Helping Our People Excel. So that will be a full service center for STD testing and treatment, as well as hepatitis treatment. And
PJ, hold on just a second. I just want to do the top of the hour so that we're legal.
You're listening to KNON 89.3 FM in Dallas and Fort Worth, the voice of the people.
There we go. And the other show, there, he's out in the parking lot getting all of his stuff in, and they'll be on in just a few minutes, but awesome. We can continue talking. This is Lambda Weekly. Next show will be on in just a few minutes. We're talking to PJ Moten. He's from Abounding Prosperity, which is an HIV organization in South Dallas. Didn't mean to interrupt what you were saying, but go ahead.
But we have our grand opening of our new community center on World AIDS Day this year. It's Friday, December 1st from 7 to 10 p.m. It's going to be a free like cocktail reception. People get to do the tour of the new space, get to...
Yeah, this is the new temporary space?
This is the new temporary space. And when I say temporary, it's temporary like for the next 5 to 7 years until we get our new permanent structure up.
Gotcha.
And the land that we've acquired right on MLK. So this is our structure until we move into our building that we build based off our capital campaign.
When that one opens, will you come back on?
Absolutely.
Okay. So that
we don't
want to
wait that long.
That would be 2024 or so?
Ish, right.
Okay.
Yeah. Go ahead and put me on the schedule.
Is October good?
Yeah, October's great. We should be open by then. But yeah, our new temporary space is great. It's going to house a number of our services. We're actually even expanding our services based off this new clinical space. We now have a volunteer medical director. We have a volunteer pharmacist. We have nurse practitioners and medical assistants on staff now. So we were able to increase capacity quite a bit to really effectively serve our community and the surrounding communities that are affected or are at risk for HIV and
so
other
STDs. So the space is actually bigger.
It's much bigger, yeah, and it's beautiful. Like, me and Kirk put a lot of thought into what it looked like, how it flowed. We were really visionaries about the whole situation, even though the trauma that we experienced from seeing what we had worked to build, you know, kind of come to a close of sorts, it really rebirthed a new motivation for us for the work and the type of service that we're providing to the community. So it's been great. It's been a great journey, and we're happy and excited for everybody to see on December 1st.
And just one thing, we talked quite a bit about PrEP. If somebody is interested in PrEP and wants to know if it's right for them, wants to talk about any risks involved with it, does it, you know, are there any problems with taking PrEP, you know, medically for me, or what are the side effects, all those kinds of questions, because everybody would be individual. Who would they call to talk to
about it? They can call anybody at our office. We can be reached at 214-421-4800. And that's Monday through Friday from 9 a.m. to 6 p.m. And anybody at our office is trained to have that PrEP conversation. You can actually schedule to come up there, and we can sit down and talk to you about it, show you the videos, give you all the support that you need and information to access PrEP.
And PJ, I want to thank you for being
here with us.
Lots of information. And we'll be back next week with more Lambda Weekly. Our guest is Neil Cazares-Thomas from Cathedral of Hope.